Tonight I want to go back into Old Testament history. I don't know whether you enjoy or appreciate Old Testament history or not, but I do, because the Apostle Paul, in writing to the Roman church, he said, whatsoever things happen beforehand happen for our learning. So Paul is saying to the Roman church, all of these things that happen in the Old Testament happen for our learning. We can learn something from them. Moses, I want to go back to the time of the life of Moses. I want to go back to the time in which Moses was camped in the wilderness. Now, if you're familiar with Old Testament history, you remember that God called Moses to go to Egypt. Let the children of Israel go. God instructed Moses to command Pharaoh, let the children of Israel go. After a time, Pharaoh let the children of Israel go. And across the Red Sea, there were 603,000 Jews, men over 20 years of age, that were said in the Bible to be baptized unto Moses. Now those under 20 years of age and the women did not count in that number. 603,000 Jews was baptized unto Moses. Now in the book of Corinthians you'll find that the Apostle Paul speaks about those that were baptized unto Moses. That is, they were accepting the leadership of Moses and they followed him across the Red Sea and into the wilderness. Now in the wilderness they were there for 40 years, during which time we find that they were journeying toward the land of Cana. Remember, the destination was the land of Cana. God said, I'm going to give you the land of Cana, a land that flows with milk and honey. This was appealing to the eye. It was appealing to the emotion. It was appealing to all parts of them as individuals. So they began to journey toward the land of Cana. Now, while they were camped in Paran, in the wilderness, God said unto Moses, I want you to gather together all of the tribes of Israel, which were 12 in number. And the head of each tribe, I want you to select him to go out and send them across into the land of Cana to spy out the land. Now, this was... This could bring some questions in the minds of these leaders of these tribes, because God had already said unto them, I'm going to give you the land of Canaan. But God doesn't give a person something that man is able to obtain for himself. For God always expects us to do what he tells us to do. For example, God fed the nation of Israel while in the wilderness from heaven with manna, because they were not able to do any better. God provided what they were unable to provide for themselves. He provided shoes for their feet. He provided water, wells that they had not dug. He provided the necessities of life. Now God provided for them those things which they were unable to provide for themselves. Now in the New Testament, you remember, in John chapter 11, where Lazarus had died, the Bible tells us he had been dead for 4 days. His body had begun to stink. He went to the sisters of which was named Mary and Martha. He said, he isn't dead. They said, yes, he is. They said, by now his body has begun to stink, and he's out there in the tomb for 4 days. He's been there. And so Jesus said, he isn't dead, but he's sleeping. They said, well, we know, but he will be resurrected, he said. But we know he'll be resurrected in the last days. So they went out there he commanded them to go out into the cemetery, or where the tomb was. And he told them, said, I want you to remove the tomb. I want you to remove the stone. I want you to remove the stone. Now, Jesus was going to lift Lazarus from the dead, while at the same time he wanted them to do what they could and was to remove the stone, you see. So God always provides, but God expects us to do what we can for ourselves. God provides salvation, but the Bible said that God also tells us, save yourselves from this untoward generation. Salvation is twofold. Some of it's a part of God, and some of it is on the part of man. It is God putting his hand down to man, and it is man lifting himself or his hand up to God. So we find here that the nation of Israel, we don't know the number at this time, because as I mentioned earlier, there were 603,000 men over 20 years of age that had followed Moses. Probably as many as 3 million Jews were now camped in the city of Paran in the wilderness. Now, while there, God called Moses, and he said, I want you to gather together all of the tribes of Israel, which were numbered by 12 tribes. If you're a Bible student, you remember there were 12 tribes of Israel. Now, Levi, the tribe of Levi, was not numbered in that number because Levi was to provide the priest, you see. So Levi was not numbered with the 12 tribes. It would, if we were to count it today, I suppose that we might say there were 13. But not in reality, there was 12. Because the tribe of Levi was not counted. There was 10 tribes to the north and 2 tribes to the south. Judah and Benjamin made up the 2 tribes to the south. There were 10 tribes to the north. So we find here that they are camped in Paran, and God tells Moses, now Moses, I want you to draw together the 12 tribes, and from each tribe, I want you to select a leader. I have a mission. I have a mission, and I want you to send 12 men on a mission into the land of Canaan to spy out the land. I want to see what it looks like. Remember that God had already told Moses that it was a land that flowed with milk and honey. It was appealing to the eye. It was the best thing that you could have at that time. So he called together these 12 men, and he sent them on a mission to go into the land of Canaan. Now here is recorded what the mission was. He said, I want you to go into the land of Canaan, and I want you to spy out that land. And here's what I want you to look for. He said, I want you to find out as to whether or not they are strong or weak. He said, not only that, I want you to spy out as to whether they be few or many. He said, I want you to find out whether the land is good or the land is bad. I want you to find out whether the cities are filled with tents or strongholds. That means that he wants to know whether or not they are permanent structures or whether these people that live in the land of Canaan are a nomad type of people that are up and here and there and all over the place. He said if they live in tents, that means they are not permanent dwellers, you see. That is, they would be moving from place to place. Whereas if they had a permanent structure, then they were pretty well they were stationary. Then he said, I want you to know whether the land is fat or lean. In other words, what about the vegetation? What about the foliage? I want you to spy out, and I want you to come back, and I want you to make a report. He said, I want you to know, find out whether the wood is good or bad. In other words, look at the trees. I want you to look at the trees, and I want you to see where there's foliage on the tree or where the trees are dying, where they're growing or where they're spindling. I want to know all that you can find out about the Canaan land. And he said, then in conclusion, this is what I want you to do. I want to prove for you to prove to me that they are a fruit-bearing city. That is, I want you to bring back some of the fruit. I want you to bring back some of that which you find. to prove to me that this land is a land worth our going into and taking. So they went into the land of Canaan, and they began to search out, and they went in there, and they came back with a report. They came back with a report that was a tremendous report. They came back with a report that said that the land is flowing with milk and honey. Just as had been said, it was a land that was flowing with milk and honey. No land had ever been seen before that was more beautiful than the land of Canaan. It is flowing with milk and honey. That means things are well. This is exactly what all of us need. Remember, at this time, for 40 years, they had been wandering in the wilderness, living in tents and caves and the like, but now they're going to scout out this area, and they find this place is a place flowing with milk and honey. But not only that, they said the men there are strong. They are strong like giants. They came back with that report. The cities are walled up. So they began to bring back. Then they said, we saw a man. They saw giants there. And then some of them said, they are stronger than we. They are men of great stature. And in conclusion, they said to Moses, they said that we, in the eyes of those people, are going to be like grasshoppers. Going to be like grass. While they will slay us, they will kill us, they will destroy us because they are greater than we. But there was one thing that they had forgotten, and that was that God was on the side of Israel. And as they came back, ten of the, and Moses called together the 12, and 10 of them said, you know what? We'll never take them. We'll never take them. Be just like grasshoppers. They will destroy us. We have no hope. We have no promise. But wait a minute. Remember, there were 12 that were sent out on this mission, and 10 of them comes back with a negative report. Why, no, there is no way that we can take the land of Canaan in warfare because they're giants. The city is walled up. Everything, they have everything going their way. They have a great military. They have giants in protection of the city. The cities are walled in. It's true that the land is flowing in milk and honey, but we know there's no way that we can take those cities. That's what 10 said. But two men said, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Now those two men were named Joshua and Caleb. Joshua, when was first called, was named Oshea. Joshua, if you remember, Moses had died on Mount Nebo at a peak called Pisgah, and Joshua took up the leadership and commanded Israel to go across the Jordan River toward the land of Canaan, and the first city they took in the land of Canaan was the city of Jericho. Now, if you remember and are a Bible student, you remember that in order for Israel to take the city of Jericho, they had to meet certain conditions. He told them how they must align their armies. How many times they were to march around the wall. What they were to do at the end of the day when they had marched around the wall for 7 days. They were to shout and blow the ram's horn. And they did. And the walls of the city of Jericho fell. And Israel went in and took the city of Jericho, the first city in the land of Canaan. But now here we find that Moses now is hearing a negative report from 10 men. They had forgotten about God. They had forgotten that God was on their side so long as they were willing to listen to God. But they came back and they began to be moved away from God. And they began to think about themselves more than they began to think about God. And they forgot the power of God. But God said, I'm going to give you the city of Jericho and I'm going to give you the land of Canaan. They forgot about that. Except two men. They were Joshua and Caleb. Joshua and Caleb were the two men that originated back in Egypt. All the many years before, 40 years before, they had to begin the journey with Moses all the way back down in Egypt. And they had traveled all the way through the wilderness, and now they were going into the promised land. They had never deviated from the Word of God. They constantly looked to God for what the needs of life and what they needed to do in order to be pleasing to God. And so it was, Moses now is calling the 12 together, and 12 says, no way. No way. They'll slay us. They'll make us look like grasshoppers. And Joshua and Caleb said, well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. They were outnumbered 10 negative report and 2 a positive report. But remember that the 2 with a positive report, though they be in the minority, they had God on their side. And when you have God on your side, you're going to be a winner. You're going to be a winner. In life and in death, you're going to be a winner. So now then we find that God made a promise through Moses unto Caleb. He said to Caleb, I'm going to give you Hebron. I'm going to give you Hebron. Now, if you're familiar with the Old Testament history, you remember that Hebron was a well-known city of the Old Testament. It was a prosperous city, and it was on the top of a mountain. It was on the top of a mountain. It was a city that was filled with all kinds of fruits and vegetables, and the land was fertile, and it was a great land. And Caleb went to Moses, and Moses said unto Caleb, I am going to give you the city of Hebron. It became one of the cities of refuge. It was a city where Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob was buried. It was a city where David lived for 7 years. So you see, it was a great city. It became a great city. And God said unto Caleb, I'm going to give you this city. Now then, fast forward. Fast forward. I don't know how old Joshua is. Moses is dead. Joshua has took up the command. And now they are all across the Jordan River into the promised land, having taken the city of Jericho, and they camped at Gilgal. They camped at Gilgal. And Joshua begins to think. He begins to think about what Moses said. And he went to Joshua, who is the commander of Israel at this time, and he said, you know what? Let's do it. He said, you know what Moses promised me when I was 40 years of age? And yet it has not been fulfilled. Caleb let Joshua know that the promise that Moses, thy servant Moses, our servant Moses, God's servant, had made a promise unto me 40 years ago, and as of this day, that promise has not been fulfilled. And now I am 40 and 5 years later, and that promise yet has not been fulfilled. I'm 85 years of age. I want my inheritance. I want to claim my inheritance. And Joshua, the Bible tells us, Joshua said, I will give you the city of Jericho, or rather the city of Hebron. I will give you the city of Hebron. And Caleb said, I am going to take that mountain. The point that I want to make tonight is this. Caleb was a man that kept moving with God. He was from the time he was a young man back there in Israel when he was 20 years of age, when he was taken across the Red Sea into the wilderness. He was a man that kept on keeping on. He never quit. And here he is at 85 years of age, and he's still going strong. He goes to Joshua and he said, I want to claim my inheritance. I'm willing to take that mountain. Now the mountain, as I said, was up on Hebron, was a tall mountain. And it was a mountain that provided the inhabitants of that city a place where they could have refuge. And it was known as the city of refuge, because they could see the enemy from afar, from the mountaintop. And Caleb said, I want to claim that mountain. He was willing to put forth the effort that he had in his body in order to go out and obtain that mountain. He didn't want God to just hand it out unto him without conditions. He was willing to meet the condition, you see. And as we study the life of these 12, we'll notice that these 12, they said, we cannot take the land. They, the 10, wanted victory without any warfare. They wanted the victory, but they didn't want the work. They wanted the spoils of the day, but they were not willing to put forth any effort to get it. Just like some people today. They want something, but they're not willing to put forth any effort to obtain it. They wanted all that they wanted without a journey. They wanted to stay on the status quo. There are people today expect God to do everything. God can do all things, but God is not going to do for me what I am able to do for myself. We have to put our trust in God, as Caleb did. Caleb went unto Joshua and he said, we can take this mountain with the help of God. He trusted God and he pleaded with God and he pleaded with Joshua himself from his heart. He said, there's no way. My heart is with God. In the New Testament, we find that the Apostle Paul, in writing to the Roman church, he said, wherefore with the heart man believeth unto righteousness, and with the mouth confession is made unto salvation. Jesus said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. It is the person that trusts God with all of his heart and with all of his mind and with all of his soul. And we find that Caleb was an individual that put his trust and heart toward God. And so it was. They wanted reward without any labor. They didn't want to do anything. They wanted the blessings. The 10 did. But Caleb, we find, as he is recorded in the book of Joshua, the 13th chapter, it tells us that he was faithful unto death. Now Joshua died at 110 years of age. Moses died at 120 years of age. On Mount Nebo at a peak called Pisgah. His eyes were not dim from the passing of time. The Bible tells us that his physical body had not abated. In other words, at 120 years of age, his body was strong. His eyesight were great. And he was able to look across the Jordan River. And he was able to see the promised land. But God said unto Moses, you cannot go there because you failed to sanctify me before my people in the wilderness when you struck the rock with your staff. You remember the story. They needed water. And God said unto Moses, speak to the rock that it might produce water. And Moses struck the rock and it produced water. But God said to Moses, you have failed to sanctify me before thy people. I commanded you to speak to the rock. And instead you have struck the rock. And in reality you have struck Christ. Your penalty and your punishment will be, you will never be able to go with Israel into the promised land, but you'll be able to see it from a distant place. And I can see tonight through the eye of faith, as Moses went up, the Bible tells us in Deuteronomy chapter, the last chapter, how that Moses went up on Mount Nebo. And as he went up to Mount Nebo, the Bible said he went alone. following the will of God, he went along. And upward he went. And I can see him as he looks across the River Jordan. And there is the land that he wanted to see and to be a part of. But God said to Moses, but Moses pleaded with God, but God says no. I will permit you to see the land from a distant place. And so Moses went up. He went up and he died on a peak on Mount Nebo called Pisgah. He died in the hand of an everlasting Lord. And his body was buried in a ravine on Mount Nebo, and nobody knew where he was buried. So here we find now that Caleb, we don't know his age at the time of his death. Joshua, 110, Moses, 120, but faithful unto death, ran until he reached the goal. He was not only willing to run, but he fought until he received the crown. Paul said in writing to a young man by the name of Timothy, he said, I have finished my course. There's coming a time in which all of us will one day finish our course. That means our life has finished. Our physical existence has come to an end. We will be removed from the land of the living into the land of the dying. And the only way that I can be pleased in the eyes of God, if I'm willing to fight the good fight of faith. And Paul said, I have fought the good fight of faith. I have finished my course. You know, when I view life, Ludie and I was talking about that the other day. We were talking about all the years that we've preached at different places and all. To me, back there 50 years ago in 1961 when I came to Woodbine preaching full time with this church was filled to capacity. We built this building. People, we could hardly find a place to sit. That, to me, seems like another life. And so many years have come and gone. It seems like another life. But now I'm 80, almost 82 years of age. But I know if I hold faithful, if I finish my course, if I fight the fight, if I continue to live on for Christ, though I be 80, 82 years of age. You know, Ludie says, you know, I don't know whether it's good you preach anymore or not. And I said, you're right. You're right. But then when someone calls, you know what I say? I'll be there. When someone calls for a funeral, I say, I'll be there. I'll be there. Here is Caleb. He said, I'm 85 years of age and I'm not ready to quit. I'm not ready to call it quit. I'm going to continue on my course. And Paul said, you know what, brethren? I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. There is laid up for me a crown of righteousness whom the Lord, the righteous judge, will give unto me in that day. All of us one day are going to finish our course. The days of our years upon this earth is 70 years and 10. And if reason of hell, they be 80 years. There's a possibility that we, many of us in this building may live to 80 years. But a lot of people die at the 70 years and 10. I can look out on this people tonight that are here. And I can know that I've had funerals for husbands and wives that died in 50s and 60s of 70. That never reached that 70 years and 10 or the 80. But you know what? The days come, and the Bible tells us the days come and the days go. And the Bible also tells us in our life that we are to be still and know that Thou art God and in Thee that we put our trust. Whatever may come, Caleb said, you know what? I'm going to put my trust in God. That's the only way that we're going to make it. We can't put our trust in government. We can't put our trust in money. We can't put our trust in the house that we live in. Because when we die, it all is over. All is over. The only thing that I can take with me to my grave is a trust in Almighty God. And I don't know how old Caleb was. The Bible doesn't tell us how old he was. But this I know, that he died. And he died as a man that had finished his course. And when others stood in opposition to what he believed to be the truth, he said, I'm going to trust God. And I'm going to put my heart and soul into the work and service of Almighty God. And I'm going out, and I'm going to take that mountain. I want to ask you tonight, how much trust do you have in God? This is the day the Bible tells us that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. You ought to be happy that you're here tonight. Not because I'm preaching this sermon, not because of Jerry leading the song service, but because God is here. Where two or three are gathered together in my name, though it be few or many, God Almighty is there. And if God is there, it is the place that I want to be. If you're here tonight, in any way that you feel that you need to respond to the gospel, it may be that you're here this evening and you've never become a Christian, or it may be that you're like the 10 spies that said, we cannot trust God. We will not trust God. We want the blessings, but we don't want to do anything to obtain them. Paul said that it can't work that way. Paul said, I know in whom I have believed, and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I have committed unto him against that day. What day is he talking about? He's talking about the judgment day. That's what he's talking about. We're all going to face the judgment day on equal terms. We'll stand there face to face with God, and we'll see God as He is. Will you hear Him say, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. Or will you hear Him say, depart from me, ye that work iniquity, I've never known you. If any way you need to respond to the gospel, we bid you to come while we stand and sing the song of Selected.